Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Clones, what's cracking? You never know exactly what you're going to get when you fire up for the jungle. I mean, I've done a lot of shows and had a lot of topics. Did you ever think that I would hit soccer as hard as I did, as early as I did in today's program? If you missed it, it's a good thing you're here. We talked soccer, and we talked Hope Solo and her announcing her candidacy for president of the U.S. Soccer Federation. If you ask me, I nailed that. It's also the start of the NFL draft season. Wait until you see what one NFC talent evaluator had to say about USC quarterback Sam Darnold. Big guest day today as well. New UCF head coach Josh Heupel, Baltimore Raven Anthony Levine Sr., and Villanova head coach Jay Wright joined us. All of that and Alvy's exceptional week that was. The Daily Jungle starts right now. So much hand-wringing about Thursday night football. And I'm not going to sit here and say that last night's New Orleans-Atlanta game was the greatest game ever, because it wasn't. But that 20-17 win for the Falcons definitely was one of the strangest games ever. Why don't we start with the fact that last year's MVP, Matt Ryan, had one of the more bizarre stretches of his entire career. From the end of the first half to the start of the second half, starting with this throw while the Falcons were driving to take the lead before halftime.
Snap to Ryan. New Orleans brings four. Matt clutches, threw a pick, and it's picked off, and the interception from Marshawn Lattimore. And he is knocked down at the 29-yard line with 4 seconds left. Lattimore comes up with his third pick of the year. Ryan throws his ninth, and this was against Julio Jones.
Thanks to Falcons Radio for that. Marshawn Lattimore picks that off, returns it to the Atlanta 29. The Saints have a chance to kick a field goal and rip the lead before halftime, right? Instead, they commit a penalty on the field goal. The half ends 10-10. Big break for the Falcons. Then they hand that break right back to the Saints on the first play from scrimmage in the second half.
Toilolo to the left side as well. Ryan going to throw on first down. That's Hooper. And intercepted? No. It is intercepted. Chris Banjo.
And it bounces off Hooper's chest.
The ball bounced away from Austin Hooper into the hands of Chris Banjo.
Ball hit Hooper right in the chest, and Banjo comes up with it. Wow.
How about that?
Hit him in a bad spot, right between the numbers. The Saints march down the field. They get a touchdown. They take a 17-10 lead. Atlanta gets the ball back, and then Matt Ryan goes Matt Ryan yet again.
Huge play right here now for Atlanta.
Ryan looks now up in the pocket. Matt to his left, loops for the end zone, intercepted. Out of the back of the end zone, Marcus Williams, and he brought it out of the end zone. Trying to throw it to Jones, who is vehemently protesting to the official in front of the Falcon bench over there. Third interception for Ryan in his many possessions.
Yeah, I'm not sure I've ever seen anything like that. Three picks in three possessions for last year's MVP. Now, not all of them were on him, I get that, but man, that was ugly. And that wasn't even the ugliest or strangest part of the game. There were the Saints committing 11 penalties, Atlanta picking up 9 first downs as a result of those penalties. The Saints losing one player after another to injury. Alvin Kamara, concussion. A.J. Klein, groin. Kenny Vaccaro, groin. Trey Hendrickson, ankle. Ted Ginn Jr., unspecified. That list goes on and on. It got to the point that Drew Brees said afterwards, quote, "It's 100% a product of playing on Thursday night," end quote. And then there was the ending itself, which was definitely one of the most bizarre I've ever seen. Brees and the Saints down 20-17. They're driving. They come up to a 3rd-and-1 on the Falcon 24. He throws an incompletion, but there was an offensive holding on the play. Instead of accepting the penalty and backing the Saints up 10 yards, Falcons head coach Dan Quinn declined the penalty. I mean, how weird was that? How whack was that? How many of you are watching that like, are you kidding me? This guy's not going to accept the penalty. So instead of kicking the game-tying field goal on 4th-and-1, like he thought they would, Sean Payton goes for it, which leads to an interesting move number 2.
Will he go for it, or will he kick the field goal to tie the game?
He and Drew Brees are talking.
I think he's going to go for it, Les. He's not going to kick the field goal here.
And here comes Brees back. So 4th and about 2 feet for New Orleans. Brees from under center. He's going to sneak and get it.
All right, so that didn't go the way Dan Quinn planned it. I mean, that could have ended really badly. You imagine if that comes back to bite him in the ass, not accepting a penalty to push him back 10 yards. So now the Saints have that first down. They've got momentum. They've got a really good look at just winning this game in regulation. They pick up another first down. They're on the Atlanta 11. At this point, it's a matter of when, not if the Saints score, and when, not if folks start to recycle all the Falcons choking jokes. Oh, and speaking of choking references, how about Devontae Freeman saying that Sean Payton hit him with a choke gesture in the fourth quarter? It's incredible. That's how you know this is a legitimate rivalry, when the head coach is dropping choke gestures on the opposing running back. But back to the game itself. New Orleans is driving. They're going to finish it. They're going to run a stake right through Atlanta's heart. Breeze goes back to pass. Second and 10 from the Atlanta 11.
Snap to him. Breeze shoots it. End zone intercepted. Oh, my goodness. Deion Jones. Atlanta's fourth interception of the year and their first turnover in 37 possessions.
It's an amazing play by Deion Jones. And a terrible play by Drew Brees. So remarkably un-Drew Brees of him. If you put him in that spot 100 times, he's going to leave with a field goal or a touchdown 99 times. Last night was the one time that he did not. I mean, that was insane. But the insanity was only getting started. There's so much more at the end of the game. The Saints still had timeouts. The game wasn't over. They stopped Devontae Freeman for 3 yards on first down. They called a timeout. And then, on second down, all hell broke loose.
Ryan Freeman, left side, got a yard. Ball popped loose. New Orleans says they have it, but was the ruling down? Right. Ruling is that Freeman was down. Schweitzer got on the football.
A huge hit. Oh!
And now Sean Payton's had a flag thrown on him.
This is well-deserved. He ran out on the field and jumped the official's face.
So that's an automatic first down. Right. Here's Cleet Blakeman.
It feels unsportsmanlike conduct against the New Orleans bench. 15-yard penalty, but by yardage gain, it's a first down.
I'm going to offer you this. Sean Payton's post game is going to be rich tonight.
Uh-oh! A mini breakdown on that play, which was like four plays inside of one play. The Saints stopped Freeman. Freeman fumbled. The fumble was recovered by Atlanta. Sean Payton ran on the field. He yelled at an official. Sean Payton was flagged. First down, Falcons. Ball game. Thank you for coming. I mean, what a shocking end that was to a really bizarre game. If Breeze throwing that pick was the most un-Breeze thing ever, then Payton costing his team 15 yards and a chance to win that game by running onto the field was the most un-Payton thing ever. Those are two of the best to ever do it, and they had two terrible moments at the worst possible times in the very end. And I'm not sure what's more shocking, that Payton ran onto the field or that he was flagged for it. I mean, we are talking about a league where some refs won't even throw a flag for a helmet-to-helmet contact, but they'll throw a flag at a coach for running onto the field in the final seconds of a game. Look, that doesn't mean that he was right to do it, of course. He shouldn't have done it. And given them a chance to flag him, but I just don't ever recall seeing a game end like that on an unsportsmanlike conduct flag on the head coach. Payton talked about what happened after the fact.
I called a timeout, and then he asked me again, and I said, I've already called the timeout. I probably said it with a little bit more oomph for vigor than I'm supposed to, but I had enough. I gotta be smarter than that.
He does. He does. I would agree with that. He does. You can't put yourself in a situation where you can lose the game on a flag like that, especially to a division rival when you're battling for the division title. But that said, I would love to know what kind of oomph and vigor there was behind it, because it had to have been some pretty serious oomph and some pretty strong vigor to get a flag like that. I mean, that was really a weird and bizarre ending to one of the strangest games I've seen in quite some time. And of course, it happened on a Thursday night. That's not one of those things where, yeah, it just seems weird because it was the only game and we were all watching it. Oh, no, that game was that weird. That was that bizarre. And they always seem to happen on Thursday nights, where the games are frankly not as good and way more bizarre. One or the other or both.
Phones, I need to borrow 1 second of your time so I can talk to you about Stamps.com. Listen, these days, you can get practically everything on demand, such as our podcast. Listen whenever you want, when it's convenient for you. So let me ask you, why are you still going to the post office and dealing with their limited hours when you can get postage on demand with Stamps.com? Anything that you can do at the post office, you can now do right from your desk. As an example, the holidays are coming up. My wife, Janet, is all about the Christmas card. We send out hundreds, literally hundreds of Christmas cards, and there's no way we could do it without Stamps.com. I'm going to print my own postage. I'm going to do it when I want and do it at home. Trust me, with the holidays coming up, you should do the exact same thing, and you'll thank me for it. Go to Stamps.com, hit the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in jungle. That's Stamps.com, enter jungle for a special, special offer. A four-week trial, which includes postage and a digital scale. Do not wait. You want to go to Stamps.com, and before you do anything else, hit the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in jungle. That's Stamps.com, enter jungle. Stamps.com. Never go to the post office ever again. I know I won't.
That's Stamps.com. Now it's back to our Daily Jungle.
We are joined by the new head coach at UCF, Josh Heupel. Josh, it's so good to have you on the show. How are you?
We're doing great. Yeah, just trying to get our feet on the ground and get caught up here.
I would imagine. So if you were introduced as head coach on Tuesday, I mean, things have to be happening so quickly and spinning so fast. But from the outside, the process seemed to move pretty fast. What was the process like for you? Did it feel quick to you?
Yeah, the process was, as far as, you know, finding out that you definitely are going to get an interviewing, and then being named the guy, I think that's just kind of the process in college football, and you got to hit the ground running, and you know, so those last few days you're trying to juggle recruiting, you know, starting to get your staff in place, and then also get to know your players a little bit when you're around campus as well. I think that's an important piece, you know, right when you first take over the job.
UCF head football coach Josh Heupel joining us. You know, it seems to me what's unlike your situation, or what's unlike other situations, is it does not appear that you're going to walk into a rebuild, obviously. You're going into a situation where the team is 12-0, they won a conference championship, and they've got a bowl game coming up on January 1st. So what's it like for you to come into a situation like that?
Yeah, there's no expectations for the following year, right? Right, Jim?
Yeah, right. You know? None at all. You're good.
Yeah.
Nothing to worry about.
Yeah. No, I'll tell you what, I'm really excited about it. Obviously, if you have a championship team, you got great character and camaraderie inside of the locker room. And in the few days that I've been around the program, you can sense that. And so there's a lot of excitement from the kids. And you know, the Peach Bowl is about finishing the 2017 year. I'm excited to watch that, and then we'll get started on 2018 right after that.
All right, so it's one thing to be introduced to the media and have that press conference, but what's it like when you walk into a room and you meet your new team for the first time? What was your message to the players?
It is different than with the media. Anytime, you know, they just went on a great run. They're 12-0. They're obviously hurt a little bit because they lose their head coach. So initially, I think there's, you know, some uneasiness a little bit. And so you try to, you know, just tell them what your program's going to be all about. You tell them what the environment that they're going to be walking into inside the building every day is going to be about. And then you also recognize that this you know, process of developing trust isn't something that just happens because you've been named the head coach and automatically it's there. You know, I told them that actions are going to speak a lot louder than the words that I just spoke, but what they'll find out is that, you know, my words are going to be my actions. I think, you know, the last couple of days, my door's been open. I'm pretty sure every player has come through here. We've sat down, we've talked, and they've gotten to get a real sense of who I am and what our vision for the program is.
Josh Heupel is joining us. He's the new head football coach at UCF. I know one of the things that you talked to the team about was that football is a game of relationships. It's about being a brotherhood and genuinely loving the guy who's playing next to you. When you were coming up as a player, where did you learn that? And then how much do those bonds translate into wins on the field?
I've been on good teams and I've been on bad teams, and the difference, you know, really isn't the talent level all the time. The difference to me is you know, how the players interact with each other, their ability to hold each other accountable, to push each other on a daily basis, and you know, their ability to be bought into one vision and one goal and be selfless versus selfish, so those are the things that we're going to try to build here. That isn't something that happens overnight. It's important that you hire people with great character that care about kids so that they can continue to sell your vision in their individual meeting rooms and at their position groups. And you build that, you know, day upon day.
All right, so you talk about who you hire. One of the first guys you hired was Randy Shannon, and he's your D coordinator. What do you like about what he brings in terms of coaching and recruiting in Florida?
I've coached against him probably four or five times. He's multiple on the defensive side of the ball. He creates issues for you, you know, schematically as your game planning and for your quarterback. You know, a three-man front, four-man front, brings pressures from all over the field, and then, you know, changes up his coverages on the back end as well. So that was something that was important to me. I felt like philosophically that's the right fit here. I know Randy's a great teacher, just haven't been around him. And then obviously his connections here in the state of Florida, and in particular in South Florida, are as strong as anybody you're going to find across the country. And you know, this is the greatest state to find talent, and we got to, you know, build a wall around the state and attract it here to UCF.
You know, I would imagine, Josh, there was probably never a time that you even remember when you weren't around football or a part of football, because you're the son of a coach. And the story goes that when you were just five, you started following your father into the film room when he was coaching back in South Dakota. Can you remember that far back? And what do you remember about those days?
Yeah, I remember, you know, riding to the office with them, D2, so low budget. My breakfast was typically a donut, which is what the players had in a little bit. You remember Tang orange juice back in the day?
You bet.
And I'd be sitting in the back of the linebacker meeting room or the DB meeting room and paying attention for the most part and soaking in some of the technique and the rules for those guys on the back end and being out at practice as well. So, you know, a lot of those guys that I grew up around that I really thought highly of are all guys that have become good personal friends of mine throughout the years.
Yeah, Josh, I would imagine the guys that you're coaching now, they may or may not know about the glory days at Oklahoma, but if you go back further than that, you were the South Dakota Player of the Year, then you went to Weber State, then you went to Snow College, where you were living in a four-bedroom apartment with seven other players and would take, on occasion, 17-hour bus trips. It doesn't sound awesome, but you've said that you had a rejuvenation while you were at Snow College. Is that the case, and if so, how?
Yeah, I think you learn to appreciate, the things that are given to you. You know, wasn't on scholarship in junior college. Obviously, wasn't living a life of luxury with the things that you just said right there. You find out that at its core, really what draws you to the game is the relationships with the players. And then going out and competing, and you want to do that at a place you can win championships at. That's important. But other than that, it's about relationships. And so, that was the kickstart to my playing career, and my playing career obviously was the kickstart to my coaching career.
Which I want to ask you about before you go, but let me say this. When you were at Snow College, Mike Leach saw a tape of you. He called you up. I mean, what a great coach and what an amazing character. What do you remember about meeting him for the first time?
That he is a character. If you ever talk to Mike, you're not going to get very many words in the conversation, but always indebted to him for believing in me. Went on a recruiting trip, spent 2 days with him, really didn't do anything other than watch tape. Got a chance to see his vision for the quarterback position and felt like I'd be a good fit in it. And obviously that was the kickstart to, Oklahoma, flipping their program around. Hadn't been to a bowl game for maybe the five previous seasons obviously, it's been doing well since.
All right, so a huge career at Oklahoma, then you go to the NFL. So what was it like when you first made the transition to coaching? I mean, given your background, did you know that was something that you were always going to end up doing?
Absolutely knew that's what I wanted to get into. It's never as easy as you think because you still have the itch to play. It's the closest thing to playing, but those that can't play anymore are in coaching. And I spent some time with the offensive line. I think that was a big part of my development as a coach, understanding, the game starts up there and you can only do what your five guys up front can do. And then obviously, I have bounced around different places and a lot of different coaches impacted my career and my thought process.
All right, so one last thought. The plan has been that Scott Frost would coach the Peach Bowl. So how do you approach, and in fact, is that how that's going to be? And then how do you approach the next few weeks between now and that game?
Well, like I said earlier, I think the Peach Bowl is about the 2017 team, and nobody wants them to go out and be more successful than I do. I can't come in within 3 weeks, implement an offense with maybe some different terminology and those types of things, and all of a sudden go out and perform and beat a really good football team in Auburn. So let's go finish it. Let's play at a high level, and let's go show the nation what this program is all about, and then we'll flip it and get ready for 2018.
Now, as you probably know, I have yet to announce my endorsement of any of the candidates because I'm waiting for the right time. I'm waiting for the right candidate, and I think I've finally found that person. I've done my due diligence. I've done my research. I've listened to what every candidate had to say. I think I found my person because last night we got the news that I think we've all been waiting for. I'm talking about a two-time Olympic champion. I'm talking about a World Cup winner. I'm talking about one of the true greats that this country has ever produced in the sport of soccer. It's an amazing resume. You know who I'm talking about. Hope Solo. Hell freaking yes. Hope hell freaking yes. Yes! Hell yes! Hope Solo is running for president of the U.S. Soccer Federation. She announced her candidacy yesterday in a nearly 1,500-word post on Facebook. And while my official position has been to remain neutral in the campaign for president of the U.S. Soccer Federation, after reading her statement, I am this close to abandoning that stance and throwing all in with Hope. She makes a hell of a lot of good points. Her platform is made up of four key planks. Number one, know how to win. Creating a winning culture at USSF. Yes, I'm all about that. Number two, equality and women's issues. Push for equal pay for the U.S. women's national team and all women in the USSF workplace. Could not agree more. It's well past time for this to be addressed. Point number three, youth and diversity at all levels. Address the issue of pay to play. Look. Pay to play is a massive issue. And while fixing that does not mean that the U.S. is going to start ripping off not one, not two, not three, not four, not five, not six World Cup trophies. But it does defy belief that U.S. soccer isn't missing out on talented players because they can't afford to enter into the system at a young age. I mean, wake the hell up. And lastly, USSF. Organization, operational and financial governance transparency. Hey, look, I am a huge supporter of transparency in the Soccer Federation. Say what you want about me and my take on soccer. You know I've always been a strong supporter of transparency in the Soccer Federation. So we've got four great planks, one amazing candidate. And this is not just some party crasher looking to make a name for herself. She has always been outspoken about issues regarding soccer governance. And yes, the haters will say, yeah, but she was a terrible teammate. And they'll point to those comments that she made after the 07 World Cup.
It was the wrong decision, and I think anybody that knows anything about the game knows that. There's no doubt in my mind I would have made those saves. And the fact of the matter is, it's not 2004 anymore. It's not 2004, and it's 2007, and I think you have to live in the present, and you can't live by big names. You can't live in the past. It doesn't matter what somebody did in an Olympic gold medal game in the Olympics 3 years ago. Now is what matters, and that's what I think.
And you're convinced that the difference would have been made if you had been in the net?
There would have been a difference.
Warrior! They'll also point out that legendary meeting in her hotel room after she made those comments, when some of her teammates said that she had ruined everything that they had worked for and had been built by the players before her. And the one teammate who left that meeting saying to Hope, quote, I can't even bleeping look at you, end of quote. Then they'll point out, because haters will hate, then they'll point out she was suspended by U.S. Soccer just last year, quote, for conduct that is counter to the organization's principles, end quote, after calling the Swedish team a bunch of cowards.
I also think we played a bunch of cowards, but, you know, the best team did not win today.
Whatever.
Cowards.
Then they'll point out that she was suspended the year before that for an incident where her husband, Jeremy Stevens, took a U.S. soccer van and was pulled over for a DUI while she was in the car. And they'll point out, because politics is dirty. Politics is a very dirty game. Because then you know they're going to bring this up too, right? That she has a history of trouble with the law. You know, like that little incident that they keep bringing up, that everybody keeps bringing up, about her teenage nephew from way back in the day. What, that? You mean that? You think that means that she's not qualified to run the Federation? Look, I'm not going to deny that these things happened, but I am going to raise a question. What if that is exactly the kind of hero that U.S. soccer needs right now? What if they need someone to go a little psychotic on the old way of doing things You ever think about that? Did you see how badly we were embarrassed on the global stage? Maybe we need somebody to go a little psychotic. Look, I don't condone breaking the law or allegedly assaulting your teenage nephew. That's not good. In fact, it's terrible. But let's not rule out the idea that maybe she has learned from that, grown from that. You see, when one of your teams has missed qualifying for the first time in decades, things are pretty freaking bleak. They're pretty dark. And when things are bleak and they are dark, what do you need? What do you need most? You need hope. In fact, if you want to comment on this take and you want to support her candidacy and throw in with her the way I have, do it. Do it on social and hashtag it hopes no dope. Do it now. Hell yes. And this is what you turn to me for. Quality, intelligent, insightful soccer takes. So don't come in here with your lame reset about he's just a hater, he doesn't get it. Oh, I get it, all right. I get it, I just don't like it. But that doesn't mean that I don't have insight and that I'm not here to help. And I am. You should check in with me more often. You got my vote, Hope. You have my vote, Hope, because you are no dope. And it's time to go a little psychotic. We need that. Dear Romy, I checked out my window. There are no pigs flying. I am in Toronto. It's pretty cold today. I don't believe hell is frozen over. I thought I heard you talking soccer, and I didn't hear anything about orange slices and Capri Sun drinks. What is going on? War Romy talking more soccer. Chris in Toronto, 18-year clone, diehard Liverpool supporter. Listen, if you're a diehard clone and you followed the show, you know that this has changed over the years. Like, I still don't like soccer. I still don't spend a lot of time watching soccer. I'll never like it, but it's my job to be informed, intelligent, insightful, and entertaining. And frankly, I'm all those things on all topics and all things, including soccer. It's a good take now. You go find a better take than that anywhere else regarding this. You won't. Dear Rome, hell yes. Hell yes. Hell yes. Hope, 2018. Stealing vans, criticizing coaches, DV, going psychotic. Love it. What could go wrong? War calling out cowards who just beat you.
Cowards.
Right? Not only is the scoreboard not the scoreboard, they lost. But the other team is filled with cowards.
Cowards.
We are joined by Raven Anthony Levine Sr. Anthony, it's great to have you on. How are you?
Man, I'm good. How you doing?
Anthony, I'm great. It's nice to have you on the show. Thank you for doing it. You've won three straight. You've won four out of five. I got to first ask, what's the vibe like in your locker room right now?
Oh, man, it's all positive. Everybody knows that we got a goal that we're working for. And know we're focused. And, you know, we all ready for Sunday. You know, we're preparing. Everybody ready, and the atmosphere is great.
And I mentioned back in Week 12 you had that interception in the win over Houston. It sealed the game. It was your first career interception. How did it feel to come through with a big play in such a big moment?
Man, it was amazing. You know, my teammates and my coaches, they really depend on me to come in on third down and situations in the 2 minutes to come in and just play ball and to be able to make plays. So to go ahead and get that game winning interception, man, it was the best. You know, my teammates were happy for him, my coaches was too. But it's always great when you can go ahead and end the game.
Baltimore Raven DB/linebacker Anthony Levine Sr. is my guest. You know, to understand an interception like that, we got to talk about your journey, which I will in a minute. But I can't let this go by without talking about the celebration after the interception, or maybe the lack of a celebration. You guys had a plan to do a celebration, but once the moment happened, it seemed like you kind of forgot what you were supposed to do. What happened?
Man, so, like, you know, it was my first interception, so. We usually don't plan our celebrations, but this one, we had it planned. It was Monday night. It was like, man, we're going to go out there. We're going to turn up. So, you know, I got my interception, and Eric Weddle and Tony, everybody surrounded me. And I'm like, all right, wait, I'm about to do it. Wait, everybody wait. And Eric telling me to do it, and then I just completely just shut down, man. Like, I was so overwhelmed with my interception that I completely bombed on the celebration. So, yeah, man, I messed it up. But Eric got his interception last week against Detroit, and he ended up doing it. So You know, we ended up getting it done, but, man, I totally bombed on the celebration.
My man, I could see it happening. You'll be ready the next time it happens, but I could see where that might happen. And I think the listeners will better understand when we talk about how this all came to be. If we go back a little bit, the moment was a long time in the making because coming out of high school, you went to Tennessee State. You got an opportunity there, and you capitalized on it. But what was your time like at Tennessee State?
Man, my time, I was there with Dominique Rogers-Cromartie. And just being around guys like him really, really helped me grow as a player. You know, when you come out of high school, you're thinking you're just, you know, you're one of the best. But then when I met Dominique, when I met DRC, man, he's a crazy athlete. But, you know, he taught me some things, took me under his wing. And my experiences in college, man, it was the best, you know, going to a great historical black college. Small school, nobody really talked too much about it. But, you know, we got athletes there, you know, and I had a great time, and I would love to go back if I could.
Right, we all would. Anthony Levine Sr. joining us. We'd all go back to college if we could. Now, you come out of college, yeah, and you're undrafted, and you sign with the Packers, and you were a tryout guy. Mike McCarthy came into the room at one point and said, we only have room to keep three guys, and you're going up against guys from much bigger schools. And then you get the word from Reggie McKenzie that you're staying. What was that moment like for you?
Oh, man. So when Coach McCarthy came in the room, and he's saying that, you know, like you said, there's guys from the SEC, guys from the Big Ten. I mean, guys is just all Americans, and I'm sitting there, I'm like, man, there's no way they're going to keep me. Hmm. You know, so I'm just like, oh, man, well, you know, I got to get inside, you know. And then when Mr. McKenzie can't get me fired, got on that shuttle to go back to the hotel, man, my heart just dropped. Like I couldn't believe it. I was just amazed, and it was a blessing. Like I'm calling my mom, like, Mom, I made it. You know, like, I didn't make the team yet, but I was just so excited to be going into training camp because, you know, I was a tryout guy. So it was so overwhelming, man. It was great. I felt like, you know, I accomplished something, and it was just a beginning to unbelievable. Journey to where I'm at now.
It is. Baltimore Raven Anthony Levine, my guest. Part of that's mindset, though, right? I mean, because the odds of you still being in the league all this time later were pretty remote, but you've done it. And you said that being at Tennessee State taught you how to grind. Lay it out for me. What's your attitude when it comes to the grind?
Yeah, when you come from a small school, you know, not too many people talk about you. So you have to go out there, you know, try to make a name for yourself. So every day you got to go out there and prove something. So coming from Tennessee State, you know, we got to do that every day. You know, we got to go out there. We got to make a name for ourselves. So even like now, you know, Terrell Suggs, you know, he went to Arizona State, so he be talking about his school. And C.J. Moses, he talking about Roll Tide, Alabama, how they always win a championship. So every day I got to go out there and say, I went to Tennessee State, and I got to show them that, you know, we got ball players at Tennessee State. So, man, every day I go out there with a chip on my shoulder, to show that, you know, that just because I come from a small school, I can still play ball. You know, I came in 2010, man, I didn't outlast it, you know, first rounders, but it's just a dedication to my hard work and also my coaches believing in me. You know, it's been nothing but a blessing.
Anthony Levine Sr., my guest. So you start your career with the Packers. You end up going to Baltimore, and obviously you feel like that's the right place and the right team for you. And then when you arrive in Baltimore, you're playing defense, which means you're going to go up against Steve Smith Sr. What was it like going up against him in practice?
Man, when you're going against a Hall of Fame player like Steve Smith, it's not going to do nothing but make you better. You know, you're going to step up to the plate or you won't. And that's what it is when you're in practice with Steve. So every day we come up, man, you gotta make sure that that your hammy's warm, that you're ready to get in a fist fight today in practice, cause Steve, he gonna bring it. He bring it every day in practice. So every time that me and him was out there, you know, we kind of went at it. And he didn't do nothing but make me better. He taught me things to look for. He taught me how to play corner, because I might have to start a few games at corner, and I never played corner before. So I'm out there going head to head with Steve in practice, and he talking to me, working, we going at it, and he's telling me like, man, you know, you gotta do this, you gotta do that, you gotta watch this, and you gotta be able, you know. So man, just going with him every day in practice has made me a much better player and made me better all around.
So when did you feel like you earned his respect? Because that is not easy respect to earn. Once you earn it from him, I got to think you've got it. When did you earn it from him, and did you get a sense that the other players and coaches were taking notice during those battles?
Yeah. One day, me and Steve came out to practice, and he was calling all our corners out. He was calling everybody out. And, you know, not too many – nobody really stepped up to him. So, you know, I was like, man, you're not going to do that to me, you know. And he was like, well, what's up? So I went out there, and me and him went on one-on-one drills. And we went like three times, you know. He won two, I won one. So we went back and forth. But that last rep that we went, you know, we actually went at it. We went at it. And every time Steve went, he'll you know, spin the ball. So he ended up catching the ball. He spinned, and I kicked it. And I just kicked the ball like, man, whatever, like, let's go again. So from that moment right there, man, just battling with him in that moment, you know, me and his friendship just went to a whole different level. And he saw that competitive drive in me. And, now to this day, you know, we're really good friends. But right there, once me and him went at it in the one-on-one drill, we went back and forth, I think that's when I gained his respect, because I didn't back down from him. I didn't back down from him. I went head-to-head with him, and he respected that, and he liked that. Like, he wanted to be competitive, and he wanted to be able to go at it with somebody. And he knew that if he come to practice, he knew that 41, Anthony Levine was going to step to him, and we was going to go, we was going to battle. If he was going to win, I was going to win, we was going to go at it. And every day since that day forward, man, me and him has been, you know, we've been together, we've been, you know, good friends.
Man, that's such a good story. Anthony Levine joining us. I love that story. And that part about him, look, I'm a media guy, so what's it matter? But I've always thought when he spins the ball like that, man, that is cold-blooded. I love that move. But if you're a defensive player and a receiver makes a play on you and he spins the ball like that, how's that make you feel?
Man, I hate that spin. When he's doing it to somebody else, I love it.
Right.
When he's doing it to somebody else, man, I love it. But when is it? I don't want that done on me. When I go out there and guard Steve, like, he's telling me, you're not spinning the ball on me today. I don't want anybody, even Mike Wallace, he do it too. But man, when they spin the ball on you, that's telling, they basically tell you, you can't guard me. And every time they're gonna keep spinning the ball on me. So I think that's total disrespect, you know. But you know, with Steve, you know, I definitely didn't want him to spin the ball. He spin the ball. And when he spin the ball, I don't know how he's doing it. But when he spin his ball, spin for like 5 minutes.
Dude, right?
I'm like, man, damn.
No, exactly. I've always wondered how he did that. I've never known how he does that. I just think it's like the coolest thing ever. But again, he didn't do it to me. So I think I know what you're saying. Anthony, before you go, let me ask you this. You earlier this week, you tweeted prayers up for Ryan Shazier. And I think that you guys understand what you sign up for when you step on that field. But what went through your mind when you saw his injury?
Man, so we watching the game, and as soon as it happened, I immediately tweeted, you know, the prayer hands, and then I came back and tweeted, you know, prayers up for Ryan Shazier, because, man, you never want to see that with nobody, with no player, no matter what team they on. You know, you never want to see that. And as soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, man, that don't look good. Like, it didn't look good at all. And I just immediately, man, I tweeted that out, and, you know, I said a prayer for him. Because it doesn't matter, man. We all family, you know. We might play against each other, competition. We might be rivals, but at the end of the day, you know, it's a game and it's football, and it's, you know, we're a family. So we never want to see nobody go out there and get hurt playing this great game that we love, you know. So when I seen that, man, I was heartbroken. I'm just like, man, like that's not good, you know. So I just want to make sure that I send a prayer out to make sure that, you know, God could heal him and just keep his hands over him and just protect him.
You know, it's a dangerous game, and you know that, and there are risks that are inherent in that game, and you know that too. But when you see something like that, does it scare you at all? And have you ever thought maybe twice about playing the game and how dangerous it is?
Man, when I seen that hit, man, I was like, man, like that's that was just one of those. Dang, I can't believe that this happened. But I do think about it. You know, it have crossed my mind, you know, like, wow. You know, it's a dangerous game that we play, and we know it's a contact sport, and we know what we're getting into when we play it, you know. But at the end of the day, You don't want to see hits like that. You don't want to see somebody hit with a crown and helmet, you know, and you don't want to see somebody go down like that. But we know what kind of game this is, and we know how to play it. You just gotta try to play it on a safe way. But sometimes you just go out there and you just play ball, and whatever happens out there happens. But you never want to go out there and trying to hit and get yourself hurt. But man, it's dangerous, man. And I just always ask God to help to cover both teams and every player on the field as we go out there and play this dangerous game that we play. But we both know, everybody know the consequences, and it's tough, man. But you never want to see that.
Jay Wright is my guest. Jay, it's great to have you back. How are you?
How are you, Jim? Good to talk to you, buddy.
You too, Jay. Great talking to you. Thanks so much. Jay, you're coming off that win over number 12 Gonzaga at Madison Square Garden on Tuesday night. I know, Jay, it's only the start of December, but when you beat another elite team like that, how big of a win was that, and how pleased are you with the way your guys showed up in that game?
Really pleased about that game. Gonzaga probably has played one of the toughest schedules of anybody in the country at this point. And so we got to see them against some really good teams, Texas just being one of them, and Florida, and a lot of really good teams. So we knew that they were playing at a high level, and we really hadn't played the schedule that they had. So coming out of the Garden, it gives us a really good feel for where we are, how good we could be. And we get back to work and get ready for the LaSalle Explorers.
Villanova head coach Jay Wright joining us. I got to ask you about Mikal Bridges. He had a career-high 28. He had 5 threes, and he had a monster dunk in the lane that looked like it was over the entire Gonzaga team. The dunk itself, Jay, was a significant moment that I want to get to in a second, but what did you make of his performance overall?
You know, it's a continual progression of improvement for him from the day he stepped on campus. It's really cool to see. As a coach, it's one of the most gratifying experiences you have, is just watch a young man who has potential but maybe isn't physically ready or mentally mature when he first gets here, but you know he's got it. And then you see him reach it. And then to do it in the Garden against a great team like Gonzaga was really cool. I was really happy for him.
And then to see him throw one down like that, too. He said after the game, quote, "Ever since my freshman year, I've laid the ball up a lot, and coaches and the seniors, they used to get on me for that," end quote. Randy Foy, Kerry Kittles, Josh Hart, they all reached out to him after that dunk. What did they tell him? And then, Jay, what's it mean to you as the head coach to have former players reaching out to your current players like that?
I love how you research that stuff, man, because that's pretty cool. That's something that we take great pride in this program. Josh Hart and the Lakers played here in Philly last night. So the team went down to the game. We saw him before the game, took pictures with him on the court, and then stayed to watch. And he and Mikal used to battle every day. And Josh would get the best of him. Mikal was the young boy. But Josh would always be the one to tell him, if he took it soft, that's not gonna fly if you want to be a big-time player. And so Josh texted him after the game, finally young boy, and Kerry Kittles calls him his little brother. Kerry Kittles like, "All right, little brother's playing hard on both ends of the floor." He loved that he dunked that and then went down and blocked the shot on the next play. So, as the head of a program, I take as much pride in the fact that those guys stay connected and those guys take pride in each other's development, right? That means a lot to me, and really that warms my heart to hear that those guys reach out to him and are proud of him.
It's got to feel so great. Jay Wright joining us on the program. Now, Jay, when you look at it, I know you like this group, and one of the reasons you like this group is because you feel like this group, quote, gives you a chance to coach them. Lay that out for me. What do you mean by that?
Well, we're lucky here at Villanova. We get pretty smart guys, good character, and they do let you to coach. They let you coach them. But every group's got a little hard-headedness to them, and I have it to me. I'm hard-headed. But this group is just so unique in that they have such a high level of intelligence, and it starts with Mikal Bridges, Jalen Brunson, and Phil Booth. There are three juniors. We don't have any seniors. But those three are all going to graduate here after their junior year. Really bright guys, come from great families, and they're just old school, and they just come every day to improve, and they kind of look you in the eye as a coach and say, all right, tell me what you want me to do, man. What do I got to do better? And that's rare. And then the young guys just watch them do that, and it just makes it easy to coach them. So it's a lot of fun going to practice every day with this group.
You know, it sounds to me like what you have then is a culture. Every coach I know talks about culture, but when you've got guys like that who lead from the front and they're the upperclassmen, and then the young guys see that and then they emulate that, then it becomes a culture. You wrote a book called Attitude, and when you develop that attitude or that culture in the program, it's something that does get passed down from the upperclassmen to the new players. My question then is this, Jay, once that dynamic is rolling, can you take your hands off it and focus on other things, or are you always working on culture and attitude?
That's a great question. In 09, I think, when we went to the Final Four in 09, I think I took my hands off it. I didn't mean to, but I think I did. And it slipped a little bit, and I learned a great lesson that we concentrated on getting that culture back rather than winning games, and we were very fortunate. And it started with Ryan Archidiakono's freshman year and Daniel Chafu, and we were fortunate because sometimes you can't get it back, but we really did focus on that. And then after 16, winning the championship in 16, that was a great lesson learned, that our goal is just to keep this culture strong every day. That gives us our best chance to win another national championship, not to try to win games.
You know, I was going to say, not to be trite about that, but in a way, is the goal to win a national championship? I mean, yeah, obviously that's the goal, but is your goal to win a national championship, or is your goal to maintain the culture? Is that even more important?
Yeah, it is. And ironically, I think we've learned this, keeping this culture strong or making the culture stronger actually gives us at Villanova the best chance of winning another national championship. If we were just trying to do things to win games here, just the way this community is, this program is, the history of this program, it probably wouldn't work. It probably wouldn't fit, you know, the community. But to keep this culture strong, guys that come here that take pride in being a part of the Villanova community, take pride in being educated, and take pride in playing for their teammates and the guys that came before them, that's our best chance of being the best Villanova basketball team we can be.
Villanova head coach Jay Wright, my guest for another moment or so. Jay, Ryan Massimino passed away earlier this year. Is there any way to sum up the impact that he had on you as both a coach and as a person?
Wow, man. You know, I still miss him. I still can't believe, you know, he's not going to call, you know, and call me after a game and talk about something we did, or call me before one of his games and say, like, how did we defend those middle pick and rolls again?
Right.
You know, he coached right to the end. He has impacted this entire university. Every coach that's ever come through here, men's and the women's coach here, Javi Peretta, has been here over 35 years. Coach Mass was his mentor. Myself, all of the guys that worked under me, all of them learned under Coach Mass. It's amazing to see the impact that one man has had on an entire community. You know, and he did it at Cleveland State, and he did it at Kaiser University, where he is. He was an amazing man, and he lived hard right to the end, man, to the last day.
And he coached right until the end. I mean, Jay, you've won more than 500 games. You won a national championship. You've won a conference championship after another. I know you're focused on what's in front of you right now, but do you think you'll do the same thing? Do you see yourself coaching right to the end like he did?
You know what, Jim? I think about that a lot. I don't think so. I marvel at his energy. I would say that to him all the time. He'd come in here, you know, a week before he died, he's in here yelling and screaming, wanting to go out to dinner and eat pasta and drink wine. I say to him, Coach, I don't even know if I have your energy now.
Right.
You know, I don't know if I'll have that. I don't. And I think the way the game is now, you have to attack this with tremendous energy. So I don't think I would, but man, I learned under him. So maybe, I don't know. I hope I got a lot of his genes in me.
Well, what I was going to say, Jay, what is that? What is that? We all want that, right? We all want to think that we're going to still go to battle like that at that age. Is it genes, or is it something else?
You know, it's definitely, it's an attitude. It really is. Like, I joked with all the guys that play with him and coach, you know, if you coached for him or worked under him, he was tough, man. He demanded a lot out of you, and he'd work you to the bone till 11 or 12 at night, and then he'd make you go out to dinner with him at 11 or 12. He'd make a restaurant stay open, and you'd eat and drink till 2, 3 in the morning, and then he'd be back in the office at 7 or 8. So, you know, we all thought, like, man, this guy drives us, but we watched him battle cancer until his last day and continue to coach, continue to work hard. And we all said he never asked. He always worked harder and did more than he ever asked us to do. And he set that example right to the end. I think he's real unique, and it comes from his passion. And I think a lot of it comes from his Italian heritage, too.
Let's get to the week that was right now.
And for more insight on some of the league's hot topics, we get it over to Jim and his views from Rome. Take it away, Jim.
Broadcasting from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studio, welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. Feeling strong? Made my New York road trip back in Southern California, where I belong. It's great to be here. So the Buckeyes had to be feeling pretty good about themselves. A conference title from one of the two toughest conferences, plus three wins against the final top 20, surely meant that the Buckeyes were going to get in again, right? Yeah! Both of them are so flawed. But go ahead, you can lose your over it if you want.
Alabama!
I'm just going to say that I can argue against both. So I'm not picking. That was a tongue.
Oh, Gronkowski with a cheap shot. That's
it was
terrible.
A bag White move. It was a dirty play.
Craziest stuff
that
ever.
That was one of those things.
Crazy.
That wasn't heat of the moment.
It was just frustration.
That wasn't something that just happened. That was something that he did.
What am I supposed to do?
Where's your shirt, sir? I don't know. Why are you barefoot, sir? I don't know. Why are you fighting with your wife, sir? Clay Matthews is my guest. Clay, what's it like to miss the lead?
It's embarrassing at first, you know, because you go and you get the touchdown and you think everybody's going to congratulate you for that. But all you hear is, you know, the boos from not having any hot. And it's been a long time since I was on the sophomore squad of Agoura Chargers.
Let's all say it with Marshawn. Ding, 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 sauce. Again, everybody. Ding, 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 sauce. I know you clones. You're going to ruin it with your Najee Davenport reference.
Najee likes to.
Okay, so Najee Davenport.
Najee Davenport goes in the hamper.
Don't do it.
So you got your bag, but we didn't get our cut.
I'm pretty sure that a demo company just failed to demo something. That's like a sticker company putting up a bunch of things on the wall and it falling right off. Thank you, Alvy.
David Carr, are you kidding me? Does he have eyeliner tattooed around his eyes?
It is a gentleman!
Attention, Chief fan. Attention, Chief fan. Evacuate immediately. Please leave the building.
Please.
You know, I think it's Ryan Shazier.
He took a wallop!
I'll tell you, this is Juju Smith.
I can't think of a scarier game that I've ever seen.
He leads with his
helmet. Chargers head coach Anthony Lynn is my guest.
You know, we always believe that, you know, we play meaningful football in December. And right now, it feels good. It feels good to be in the hunt.
I'm going to coach this team as long as my key card works.
If you're Ben McAdoo coaching the New York Giants, you probably don't want to be dumping motor oil into your lettuce and gearing up in a clown suit every single day. Huge day in the jungle because we are back in Portland. So it's awesome to be back on in the 971, 1029, 750
the
game.
This is the game, Doug!
I am pumped.
Great to have you back in the 503, man.
Thanks for getting back on the air, buddy. We appreciate you being here.
I apologize for us taking you off the air and replacing you with a racist who got ran.
It's been pretty bad here without you.
Mr. Rome.
My friend talked me into going to something called a tour stop in Portland.
I said, you've never been up on that thing. Sir, I've been on this base for 10 years and I've never gotten within 1,000 feet of the Blackhawk until right now, sir. And I said, and they're going to let me up in that thing? Sir, flaps up or flaps down? Brian Fogle is my guest. Are we having this discussion about the IOC banning the Russian Olympic Committee from the 2018 Winter Olympics if not for you and your documentary Icarus?
100%. There would be no banning of Russia from the Olympics had Icarus not happened.
Tom Haberstroh is my guest.
Good. I'm sad to report, though, Jim, that I no longer have the mustache. I just had too many people just jumping all over me. So attracted. I'm sorry. I couldn't handle it anymore.
At Jim Rome.
Ducks!
Website, jimrome.com. Go Ducks!
Ducks!
How dare you? I would never say that.
Jim, I feel like I got to ask a guy, hey, are you ready for me to hit you right now before I hit you?
For me, I'm not here to judge at all. I love the game. Are you kidding me? It's part of the reason I have my living is because of the game and I don't play the game. But I don't love the idea of my kid taking that kind of punishment.
Already had him pictured in the Denver Broncos uniform, you know? I honestly don't think if I can morally put my kid in that danger.
Guess what? You're soft and your kid's soft. Go play soccer.
Mike Hopkins.
I remember my brother. We're in the car. He's like, oh my God, you got to hear this guy. His name's Jim Rome. He's the best broadcast you ever hear. He's unbelievable. Pathfinder, a white Nissan Pathfinder, and we were driving around listening to you and just being on the show today. It's surreal, man.
Email.
Policeman, fireman, cab driver, coal miner. We know what we signed up for. Did you just throw cab driver in their war high school graduation tassels hanging from rearview mirrors? When things are bleak and they're dark, what do you need most? You need hope. Hope freaking solo.
I firmly believe that.
Hashtag hopes no. Hell yes.
Hell yes.
Hey, man, can't be going around endorsing people for president, dude. You're supposed to be the media. You have to be impartial, bro.
This guy is nuts. We expect you to have an opinion.
What do you want from your talk show host? Do you want me to be impartial and stay the hell out of the fight and stay on the sidelines? Or is it okay for me to pick a candidate? Josh Heupel.
My breakfast was typically a donut. Donuts. That in a little bit. You remember Tango
sure.
and Shoes back in the day?
You bet.
Sam Darnold.
Loopy motion. Bad face. Overrated. Wait, what? Bad face?
I mean, have you seen this guy's face?
Anthony Levine Sr. He spins the ball like that. How's that make you feel?
Man, I hate that. Wait, when he do it to somebody else, I love it.
Right.
When he spins the ball, I don't know how he do it. When he's spinning his ball there for like 5 minutes.
Dude, right?
Like, man. I love how you research that stuff, man.
Straight like that.
Tiger! Dumbass!
Ding ding sauce.
Ding ding sauce.
Whack me.
Band from Chicago.
Karma!
Calabasas is the real deal now.
Flaps up.
Who is it from?
Larry King Live.
Much love, Jim. Talk to you later, buddy.
102.9. 750 the game.
Wow.
Good night now!
Alvin, I'm not kidding. I know I say it every single week. That was one of my favorite ones ever. That was amazing. That was amazing. Alvin freaking DeLauro. Tweet at Alvin. Let him know what you think of that. That was amazing. I want to hear it again. I'm going to bump that again on the way home. That's it. You did it. You did it. Good show. Good week. Now do what you do. Trust the podcast. Enjoy the weekend, and I'll see you right back here on Monday. I'm out.